Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is March 19, 2021, a Friday morning here in Nashville. As always, thank you to Ron Trammell and the Cats Tribute Band for our bluesy intro music. Today's program marks the beginning of our fifth year of presenting the Mark Fraley Podcast. This will be our 64th program. The time has certainly flown by. The pandemic put a little hitch in our step there for a while, but we are energized and excited to, as ever, to bring you new stories. If you have found our webpage at markfraley.com, you will have access to the entire archives of our program. I would encourage you to scout through it, and I feel assured you will find something of interest. One of the things I strive to do with this program is to bring to light the stories of the dedicated and gifted people who serve our state in parks and recreation and in conservation. And we have an incredibly long bench of such talented people, seemingly at all positions. Some weeks ago, I noticed that the Department of Environment and Conservation had begun the process of updating the state Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan. This plan has the weird acronym SCORP, and the SCORP is done every 5 years. 4 years ago, we spoke with Ann Marshall on this subject, and in that interview, we went into great detail about the methodology of the SCORP. Today, we sit down with George Brogdon, who is the professional responsible for shepherding the development of this new five-year plan for recreation in Tennessee. And I think the responsibility is in very competent hands. I've been wanting to talk with George for some time, and as you will hear, George is a journeyman professional in the parks and recreation field, serving with both the Memphis Park Commission and the Germantown Department of Parks and Recreation. He retired, but has now come back to work for the state of Tennessee. He currently serves as the West Tennessee Parks and Recreation Technical Assistance Consultant. He has been involved in numerous capacities serving his profession at the regional and national level. His professional achievements and service have been recognized by the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association with the prestigious Fellow Award. And so I hope you will take the opportunity to provide your input into the state plan for parks and recreation, and that you will enjoy this interview with George Brogdon. George Brogdon, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be here, and I feel privileged to be part of your podcast.
Well, it's really fun to have you. It's been a long time in coming. You were here last year when Gerald and I recorded the podcast in person here at the house, and so it was fun to see you then. And I made a commitment then to have you aboard at one point, and the opportunity presented itself. So I'm thrilled that you're available. So are you coming to us from West Tennessee?
I am coming to you literally on the Mississippi-Tennessee border in Fayette County, and on 50 acres. And like I think I told you in my email, I feel like I live in a park.
Well, I want to hear all about that. George, you know, as you know, I've been trying to interview many of the people that I know who have received the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Fellows Award. You're one of those, and I'm thrilled to have you and to talk with you about your career in parks and recreation. I also want to talk with you today about what you're doing with the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Systems Plan, or Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan, I guess is the proper term, and what you're doing with that currently. So we've got a lot to talk about. Tell us now, you know, when I have known you a long time, I mean, at least 30 years, and I always thought that I was maybe 5 or 6 years older than you. But then I've got your resume the other day, and we're pretty much contemporaries in terms of births and when we graduated college and that sort of thing. You grew up in Memphis.
I did, in a very blue-collar community called Frazier.
Still there. North Memphis, yeah.
Yes. I did. It was a great place to grow up, and a lot of work ethic.
So tell us about your growing up.
Well, we grew up in a small house. I had five sisters, Mark,
My
and
goodness.
four of them were older. I had parents that were both involved in the war. So when they get out of the war, they got married. My dad was 30, my mom 28, and they had six kids in 8 years. We lived in a house that was 800 square feet, so
Oh
we got to
my.
know each other really well, and so we spent a lot of time outdoors.
So you chose in high school to go to Memphis State to school. I call it Memphis State. That's out of habit. I'm sorry. It's University of Memphis, and to major in parks and recreation.
Yeah, actually, it took me a while to get there. A year after school, I just worked for the Kroger Corporation because we were paying our own way through school, had to build up some money, and I went to Union University the first year. The first year they were on the new campus, the fall of 75. And then the next year, I got a scholarship to go to a junior college at the time. It's Williams Baptist College now. It was Southern Baptist College, junior college at the time. And I was on a music scholarship. They had a musical group, and I was a singer. I was a music major, Mark, for years
Oh
in
my.
sacred music, worked in churches, and actually along the way over the years, started working part-time at Fraser Community Center in 1976 as a lifeguard, and realized when I was almost ready to graduate with a music major that that's not what I wanted to do. And so I went back, changed my major to recreation, and actually have 198 undergraduate hours.
You doubled up,
But
didn't you? Yeah.
I did. And but the good thing was the Memphis Park Commission at the time had a tuition reimbursement program. So that was a huge help.
That's terrific. So you graduated Memphis, University of Memphis in what year?
Memphis State
Yeah.
actually graduated in, I would have graduated with the music degree in 89 because it slowed down to about 6 to 9 hours a semester because I started working up through the Memphis Park Commission pretty quickly and had great responsibilities and great jobs. So I couldn't see quitting a job that was I virtually wanted when I would graduate.
So
So I did everything at the same time.
you were
Yeah.
going to school part-time while working for the Park Commission.
Absolutely. Yes.
Fantastic. So I did see that you started as a community center director.
I did. After being a lifeguard, we worked part-time, and part-time workers back then, that meant your salary. You still worked 40 or 50 hours a week, but you made $3.50 an hour, whatever it was. And my first full-time job at the Park Commission was $582 a month. And I was at McFarland Community Center. And but I look back at those times and names you will remember, the Gerald McKinneys, the Jimmy Ogles, people who were just really instrumental, had great mentors. School is really important, but until you get out there and get your feet on the ground and active in things, that's where you really learn and learn who you are.
Some of my listeners will know this, but some may not. But the Memphis Park Commission is one of America's great park and recreation agencies. I mean, it's got a reputation for excellence that goes back 50 or 60 years. Tremendously diverse organization. And you could every aspect of parks and recreation is involved with that agency.
Yes, when I got there in 76, I was only 4 years after they won the national gold medal. A lot of people don't realize they did that. In 1972, Jim Hadaway was their director and then left there and went to LA County. And then Gordon Sprague came in, I think, right after him.
I knew Gordon,
And then
sure.
eventually Gerald McKinney was director for a while. And but yes, there was a time when the Memphis Park Commission, the commission itself, probably had more power than the city council. And it was a great place to be. They had, I mean, just so many d different divisions and departments. They had a mobile units in the summertime that would go around to their 180 playgrounds. We'd never do this now, but they had a boxing mobile unit, a putt-putt golf mobile unit where they take everything out of the truck, a dance mobile unit, just water activity mobile units and just roller skating, where they'd have 100 skates in the trailer and they'd go to a playground, put them on the kids, and let them skate in the parking lots.
Fantastic. And, you know, people don't understand, but the Liberty Bowl and all that associated with that venue, which is, do I recall, at the fairgrounds?
Yes, and it was right near the Park Commission office, and all came under the Park Commission.
Right. And Overton Park, the zoo, you know, all of these entities had some relationship fundamentally with the Park Commission. And so it was a complex operation, like none. We have none like it in Tennessee. Now, Metro closely approaches it at this time, but tremendously diverse organization.
Correct. And a lot of the zoo and all of that, the zoo, the stadium, all of those entities were directly under the Park Commission structure. Now, many of them have 501c3s that work jointly with the city, as you see all across the nation.
Right. Yeah. So you got an opportunity to leave that organization and take on a broader role with the city of Germantown.
I did. I had a couple of job offers. In fact, I have a funny story. My wife came to lunch and we had interviewed for a job in East Tennessee and interviewed for the Germantown job. I didn't hear anything on the East Tennessee job, and so we didn't think anything was coming of that. But she came to lunch and my secretary at the time, Ms. Brown, said, "You have two calls." And it was the representatives of Germantown and the other city at the same time. And my wife said, "I'm leaving." And I said, "What about lunch?" She said, "You figure it out." So we took the Germantown example, and I'll tell you, I was telling you about great mentors, probably the best park director I have ever seen in my life, tireless, and just had a vision for success, was Harvey Faust.
Right.
In Germantown, Tennessee. When he moved from Biloxi, he had an office on the beach overlooking, you could see the sunset from his balcony. I'll never forget that. I called him because Germantown had been through three park directors in 2 years. And I said, you know, did they get you on a bad day? Why in the world would you be moving to Germantown from Biloxi? And he wanted to get back closer to home, Oxford, but he saw a lot of opportunity there. As did the other three park directors that were there short times, but he saw it and he got a good team around him. Gerald McKinney came out, worked with him for a while before he moved on to the state.
I'd forgotten that.
Yes, yes. In fact, Gerald was really wondering if the Germantown job would be good for me. And we had a long discussion about that, but it was totally different from Memphis, where you're one of the spokes on a big wheel, to where you're the hub now, and you've got to figure out how all those spokes work, and you may be the only person to make those work. So
it's for my listeners that may not be familiar with Shelby County and the multiple cities that exist within that county, Memphis being the most prominent one. Tell us about Germantown and how it developed over the years. I mean, from its origin.
Yeah, it's really interesting because when I worked for the Memphis Park Commission, we had 185 playgrounds, both in the city and county. There was the Shelby County Conservation Board, and they would contract with the Park Commission to staff and manage those. So I managed playgrounds from the northern suburb, which would be Arlington, all the way through, because none of these Arlington, Lakeland, Bartlett, Germantown, Collierville, Millington, none of them had park departments at that time. Shelby County Conservation had county parks in those areas, and we would run playgrounds there at all of those. So I was a supervisor of those, and I would start in Arlington and work my way down to Collierville. We didn't have cell phones and things like that each day. I would take my pad, see what each playground needed. I had, I think, 26 playgrounds that were outside the city limits. And I think Bartlett, to be honest with you, was the first one that got a director, Jesse Whittington. He had been the director at Raleigh Community Center. I had worked with Jesse. And another mentor.
Terrific guy.
Yeah. I mean, when I look back, we had so many park professionals, and I got to interact with so many of them. And they all had different skills that I learned and tried to emulate, I'll be honest with you. And I learned real quickly, there's hardly ever an original idea. You may modify it, but look and see what people are doing.
Well, Germantown is sort of in the eastern section of Shelby County and has grown as a kind of a bedroom community for Memphis, kind of upper class neighborhood, generally speaking.
Oh, definitely. Their average family income now would be well exceed 150 grand.
Okay.
So compared with the state, that's probably 35 or whatever.
Right.
So,
right.
And then Collierville is between it and the Fayette County line, and Germantown is landlocked. So they're going to stay around that 40,000. Both Bartlett and Collierville have grown larger, and all of these have fine departments. I had the opportunity with Harvey. We became only the 12th accredited, CAPRA accredited department in 1996, Germantown did. And then a year later, we really pulled off a coup and won the gold medal in 97 at Germantown. And
fantastic.
They haven't done that again since. And that was exciting. I got to write the application. Mark, I had written 10 applications in a row for 10 years. And
finally hit paper. Trying to get that.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yes, it's Harvey would give it to me every year, and I did a little bit different, but of course, being a capper, and at that time, I was already picked to be the program chair for the NRPA Congress that was going to be held in Nashville in 99. Dean Tice, executive director, asked me to do that in 95, and so I got on the committee in 94, and I started working, and putting together, back then, we had 20 session times and 20 sessions at each session time. So we had to put together or narrow down to 400 speakers and sessions for the NRPA Congress. And I was chairman of that. And that was a great opportunity as well. But yeah, Germantown has defined probably like Brentwood or Franklin in your area.
And it has, I can remember when I was in state government and the department was making grants to cities. Germantown was among the very first to do really a very fine Parks and Recreation Master Plan for the city. The methodology of which, the typical plan was all about brick and mortar and what facilities that were to be built. Their plan took it a step in terms of the broad scope of park and recreation offerings and cultural arts, nature study, hobbies and games and the vast array of things that can be included. They did surveys and analysis of all of those needs, and this was 81. Are you familiar with the plan that I'm speaking of?
I am. And then we built upon that.
Yes.
And we kind of did it backwards. And, I look at many facilities, and the facilities were built in a neighborhood before we really knew what the program should be for that neighborhood.
See, and that's backwards. Yeah.
Right. So what we would do is go in a lot of community work and say, these are the programs, and then develop facilities that would support those programs. And over the years, we had fun, Mark, doing a lot of what we call, we had the bat and ball and the aquatic facilities like everyone has, but we also were able to develop, and we did this while I was in Memphis. Jimmy Ogle was a big proponent of this. Little niche things, whether it be table tennis. We had a remote control car track, and a lot of these are times built by the volunteers at Cameron Brown. They still have croquet lawns at Johnson Road Park in Germantown. We came up with the second disc golf course in the county after the one at Shelby Forest State Park, which is still draws hundreds of people and every Saturday and has tournaments. So we kind of looked at those different things, and other communities are doing that now. Bartlett actually has a cricket pitch, I believe. And
my goodness,
our grounds help pay for that. Yes.
Wow. The and as I recall, am I correct in remembering that the Wolf River kind of meanders through that area, and there's some greenways that are associated with that?
It is. We have an alderman, Bob Parrish, there in Germantown that had a vision in the 90s. And we a guy named Mr. Walsh, who was with one of the A&E firms, we all sat down at a table and we had a map of the city. And Dr. Paris, he was a dentist, took a Sharpie and did this big circle. And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "That's going to be, I don't think we called it Greenway back then, but whatever we called it, Raleigh, North Carolina was really big in those time. And I went and looked at theirs and was really impressed. Of course, they have running streams and clear water. It was, you know, it's just picturesque. But Dr. Pear said, "We can use 7 miles on the Wolf River that was divided us basically from Shelby County at the time, later to become Memphis. And then on each, the east and west borders of the city close to them, we had power line easements. And then on the south side, we had a railroad, which is still active." And he brought up, "You've heard of rails to trails." He said, "Could we have rails with trails?" And so it, when and if that's ever totally completed, it would be about 26 to 30 miles if you count all the fingers. And I think today they're probably, and I hate to say because I haven't been there in quite a few years, we're probably in that 10 to 12 miles range at this point. But so it's exciting. And we knew it wouldn't happen. But you were talking about the plan just a second ago. And I think what's important was we were able to get out ahead on a lot of areas that would be annexed and also ahead on getting property. Once the land starts to be developed, it's very hard for a city to compete with developers for the price of property. So we did a parkland, mandatory parkland dedication policy about the time I got there in 1987. And depending on the density and the population of the development or whatever, we were able to get both land and dollars through that. And when I went to Germantown in 87, we had about 6 or 7 parks. And when I left, in 2014, we had 26. So a lot of that was because of that dedication policy. And it goes back to that plan because we knew eventually the city would fill out.
That's just excellent. Let me step back just a second. We've been kind of rushing through this story here. What you talked about switching from music to parks and recreation. What was it in your heart that made you want to do that?
Well, I thought that's interesting. So I was in music, a sacred music major. I was a forest major. Right. And a lot of great things. And up until recently, I was kind of losing my voice in my old years. I would still fill in at churches and things and lead the music on a Sunday morning or whatever. But the greatest thing that ever happened to me, Mark, from singing was, and you can relate to this, back in late 70s, early 80s, I would go sing at people's weddings, and they wanted the song If by Bread, and they wanted the wedding song, and almost everyone wanted the same songs. And I made $2 or $3 an hour, literally, and I could go and sing in a wedding and make 75 or 100. So I would do those. I don't know if I became the wedding singer or not. But one afternoon, it was a baseball player from University of Memphis, and his bride was, I worked with his mother at the Memphis Park Commission. I was singing at Our Lady of Perpetual Help, and this cute girl came down the aisle, and I never stayed for the receptions. I got my check. A lot of times, I didn't even know the people. I'd just go out the back door and go do whatever it was I needed to do on a Saturday afternoon, go play softball, fish, or whatever. But there was a cute girl there, Mark. So I had to hang around and meet her. And 9 months later, I was holding her hands and singing to her in our wedding. And it's been 39 years now.
Fantastic.
And so that was the best thing I got. But I think what it really came down to, and a lot of prayer there, because I felt like God had called me to that ministry, was I realized that, you know, we can be a minister in whatever field we're in. And I really was drawn, and a great professor, Dr. Mel Humphreys, chairman of the department at the University of Memphis, Stan Walls, I could go on and on, Frank Simonton, Wayne Gutz out there, Dr. Price. And I sat down with one of them one day and said, "Man, I'm thinking about changing my major." And they said, "Well, we'd love to have you. They said, I'm not sure from an economic standpoint, that'd be the smartest thing to do since you're so close to finishing your music major. And I even thought about going to the University of College and coming up with a music recreation degree. You know, they would let you design your own major.
Sure.
I came very close to that. And in retrospect, maybe should have. God has blessed me in the field of recreation and parks. And, you know, I've told you some of the just many people I've met and learned from and got to, you know, go to what I call, you know, just the top level in the field. And so, but that was kind of, I've really enjoyed working in the parks and rec field. And the reason I'm in this job today, because, you know, I'm retired and don't necessarily have to do this, is I love helping people. When I would do a major event at Mud Island and we had 10,000 people out there and I'd got there 4 a.m. and worked to midnight and 2 days in a row, but I would look out there at these thousands of people enjoying themselves. And that's what really intrinsically made me feel good was, hey, I had a little bitty part in bringing this, you know, happiness to all these people.
Well, that's well said. You've just said a lot, and I want to unpack it just a little bit. You made reference to the job that you're doing now. Tell us what you're doing now.
Well, I'm a park and recreation technical assistant consultant with the Recreation Educational Services of TDEC, Tennessee Department of Environment Conservation. And we do two main things. We administer a grant program, which is about every other year, about $30 million. And these are grants to help cities and counties develop parks and recreation facilities. And then the other part, the technical assistance, is going in and helping communities, what I say is kind of optimize their opportunities to provide leisure services for their citizens. And this was something I shared with you that I met a former person in this field, Jerry Dillahay, way back in 1984, was having lunch with him at the Maxwell House Hotel for the TRPA conference. And I told myself at that time, one day I want to be a park task consultant. And it took, 30 years, 32 years, but I got to do it. And so,
well, you know, it's interesting. It's as you well know, I did that for the first several years of that program. And it's kind of a one man band, but it's to this day, it's the most fun I ever had in a job, to go out to small towns and big cities and meet with the mayors and the city councils and the garden clubs and whoever was there to talk with us. Tell us about your experiences on the road.
Well, they've been great. I think I shared with you a little town in Elkton, Tennessee.
Oh my.
300-400 people maybe. And got to sit there and saw the mayor, Mayor Thompson. She was crying when we presented the check with her because they were getting their really first developed park, had some pieces of property and things. And that's just one of many going in. The other day we met with the Perry County, not a large county. It's on the eastern side of the Tennessee River.
Right.
Two towns of about 1,900 people, Linden and Lobelville. And
right.
we were Gerald Parrish and I were another great person to work with and learn from. We were talking with the three mayors, the county mayor and the two city mayors, about Mark putting together a department that we may could use our trip grant with, our Tennessee Recreation and District
Amen.
Plan.
Where Amen.
We
Wonderful.
Help, we plan a park director and a professional. And, you know, I got excited in there. And when you get as old as me and you get excited, that's a great thing. But I got excited about putting together a plan that would, you know, allow them to have a park director that worked with the county in the two cities. And we see it in Maryville, Alcoa, Blount County, apparently been very successful
there.
That's
right.
Brownsville, Haywood, and others. And so none of those would be able to support a park director by themselves.
Right.
But together possibly could. So those are some of the experiences that we've seen out there. And listen, I've through NRPA, TRPA, and Southern Region over the years, I was chairman of the Southern Region as well. I've seen a lot of things. I've spoken in a lot of different states, and That comes to really be valuable now as I'm helping cities and counties, because there's a few things I haven't seen, but not many. And so it gives a great opportunity.
Well, you know, the real challenge in Tennessee today is the counties and cities like Perry County, I guess Perry County is one of the least populous counties in Tennessee. It's maybe not, out of 95 counties, it may be number 90. I mean, it's way, way small population basis. Mousetail Landing State Park is there, and beautiful park, by the way. But it's a real challenge for a county like that to exist at all, to fund a school system, which is their major commitment, but then to add amenities like a park and recreation department, very difficult to do just by one little city. They've got to do it cooperatively if they're going to do it at all. And even then, it's going to be a challenge. But this is where we have probably maybe 20 counties in Tennessee that are in that kind of posture, where they're really lacking in resources, and it's going to take some imagination to take them over to take them over that threshold into parks and recreation. But once they do, it's going to make change that community fundamentally and make them a much more attractive place for attracting businesses and that sort of thing.
Well, you just touched on several things. I know you were director of state parks back in the day.
Right.
And Mousetail Landing being one of those. We've had meetings at Mousetail Landing. We've really put in initiatives. A lot of those are what we call at-risk counties from an economic standpoint. So we Department of TDEC and RES in 17 and again in 19 distributed grants to the at-risk and counties. And we did a park and recreation master plan for the entire county of Perry County. And that's where, and all three of those are now, they have active grants, both Perry County, Linden, and Lobeville. Linden's building a splash pad, which will be an economic draw in that community. Veterans Park is being rebuilt for Perry County, and Lobeville is redoing a park that was originally built with an LWCF grant in the mid-70s.
I remember that park, sure.
So they're really, you're exactly right. I see these communities and as factories and things move out, communities that used to be 5,000 are now 1,500, struggling, you know, trying to get a footing. But what we really learn, and you and I both know this being in the field, one of the best things you can offer, jobs are great, safety's great for community, but if you can offer quality of life, if you have a great leisure program, if you have great leisure facilities, things for people to do, to recharge, to recreate, as I like to say, instead of recreate.
Sure.
And the small communities want those things too.
Absolutely. I mean, these are communities, and if you look at that list of distressed counties, you're gonna see places where they used to have a shoe factory.
Exactly.
Or they used to have a plant where they put together Levi's or, you know, the cut and sew industries as they were referred to, and all those jobs have left. And so in many of the places, the people have left as well, especially the young people. And so park and recreation can fill in that dimension. It's not going to, literally, it's not going to be a job for people, but it may be create the atmosphere where people might want to move there.
Yes. And you were talking about some of the things I've come to face with. People are really getting creative now and creative with our grants. We have done farmers markets, but Savannah got much more innovative, and their farmers market is used every week, and not every week for a farmers market. They put an ice skating rink in there in the wintertime, and they have hundreds of kids in there. They have weddings there. They have concerts. It's a really beautiful a beautiful farmer's market. I know that kind of sounds like an oxymoron, but they're thinking of innovative ways to provide recreation. Bells, Tennessee, we just finished a facility there that will, when I was at the Memphis Park Commission, we had an entire theater department, children's theater, adult theater, and theater in the parks, and those kinds of things. And now Bells, Tennessee, population 400, maybe up in.
And we're talking about Bells in up near Clarksville?
No, Bells, it would be north and east of Jackson. And I'm looking see which, I think it may be in Crockett County.
Okay. And all right.
I have a state map of all, I have 26 different counties. So I have them up here where I can relate
to
them. I see.
Them, but, well, that's in the West Tennessee region then. Right. Right.
It is. Oh. And, but they've just built a wonderful little children's theater that's also going to be used for recreation program and dance classes and community meetings and events and concerts and right downtown Bells. And so, and they're not in the Fluid City. What was so cool about this, we had other grants involved in it also, some sustainability grants and things, but they went out and did bake sales and sold candy, and they raised, that little community raised over $300,000 to help match some of our
That's
money.
Just fantastic. You're going to laugh when I say this. I'm talking with you today, and I'm thinking about Jack Frosson.
Yes, sweet.
And you're reminding me of him right now for some reason or another. I don't know what it is, but you and I had a friend who was a recreation technical advisory guy in North Carolina, and a great big man. Never met a stranger. And was always excited about what he was out there doing. Are you with me?
Yes. Yes.
I think we may have lost our connection there for a second. Go ahead.
Mark? Okay. How about now?
Good. Yeah, we're good.
Good. Okay. Yeah. Swede was great. I got to meet him through Harvey in the Southeastern Conference. Like I said, I was chairman of the Southern Region at one point, and so was Swede. Love Swede, big guy, 6'6", basketball player.
Oh my!
He, Joe Abrams out of Tampa, Tom Martin with Southern Region. I mean, I just had the opportunity over the year to meet so many. George Deku out of Biloxi, just really pillars of the park and recreation.
That's fun.
And some, and they're, you know, many of them have passed away now. Gerald McKinney has passed away from Memphis. And
I had not heard that. I didn't know that.
Yeah. A few years ago. And, but I think, I'm not going to say I took it for granted, but I didn't realize at the time that I was, you know, rubbing shoulders with, you know, like the Michael Jordans of the park and recreation industry.
True enough.
What, you know, how lucky was I? Thank you, Lord. I mean, you know,
happen? Yeah. So you've retired from your work at Germantown. I guess you were assistant city manager finally when you
assistant
retired and then came to work for the state.
Yes.
And let's let this be a kind of a breezeway through to the next portion of our conversation. Before we do, you and your wife had moved to Fayette County, which is just to the east of Shelby County, which is the Memphis County. So the main city in Fayette County is it Somerville?
Well, Somerville is a county seat, probably about 3,500 people, but up in the northeast section, kind of contiguous to Bartlett and Lakeland, not far from Arlington, is Oakland, Tennessee.
Okay.
Which probably has a population of more around 7,000.
Okay.
And, but I live in the very south end. I can look out the window and see Mississippi and a 500 acre cattle farm. I see lots of cattle out there. And, so I live between the cities of Rossville and Moscow.
And you have set up a little farm operation there. And I'm looking over your shoulder and I see a Christmas tree grower sign.
Yeah, so I'm a member of the Tennessee Christmas Tree Growers Association. I'm a member of the Southern Christmas Tree Growers Association, which is Mississippi, Louisiana, and Alabama. I'll be going to a workshop there in Walnut Grove, Mississippi in just a couple of weeks. And we're growing Christmas trees. My wife and I, we've always enjoyed going out and cutting our own tree. Did that when my twins, I had three sons, were very small. And we also and visited wineries over the years. And so I had to decide, hey, do I want to grow grapes and or do I want to grow Christmas trees? And the reality of both are that if you're a wine connoisseur, you probably don't drink a Tennessee wine unless you just happen to go by. And we love to visit Tennessee wine. Errington's one of our favorites. But part of their wines, they bring in grapes from California.
Sure.
And because you can't grow a Cabernet here, and you can't grow a Douglas fir here, and you can't grow a Fraser fir here. So we use different types of cypress and pines. And I still dig up, our property is very rural, and some has grown up. I still dig up actual eastern red cedar trees. And
sure,
so,
sure.
I'm in the process right now. I can look out here and look on the hillside. We have very hilly land, which I love because I grew up in the flatlands. And after a couple of weeks from now, when I get all my trees in, I'll have 3 years and about 1,000 trees in. And so either the Christmas of 22 or 23, people will come out. I've done a market plan, a business plan, and cut your own or pick yours and we'll cut it for you. And I've always wanted to, I love working and planting things and growing things. And in Germantown, we just had four-tenths of an acre lot, but an entire backyard was a flower bed all the way around the fence line. And I would like to grow things that usually don't grow in our areas. Like there's a northern spruce that's getting very sure. large in Germantown area, but you don't really see those down here
sure.
Because of our humidity and heat. So that's what I do now when I'm not doing the partas, and I work shot clock at basketball games when I'm not doing all those other things. And here soon I will, you know, not too far future, retire again from this time from the state and really focus on my last career of the Sugar Hill Christmas Tree Farm.
I love that. Tell us what you do with pro basketball.
Okay. Well, one of those people I mentioned earlier, Jimmy Ogle, got me involved in football and basketball, what we call game operations and statistics. Way back in 1984. So in 84, the colleges, and we were part of the same conference as the Cincinnati Bearcats. Right. I was trying to think of the name of your coach as Ed. Trying to think of his last name. He would take off his jacket and throw it, and it was pretty exciting to watch at the time there in the Coliseum. But I actually kept the shot clock for Keith Lee, who was a great basketball player, and took their team to the Final Four in 1984. So
Are you talking about Huggins?
No, it was long before Huggins.
Well, okay.
I wish I'd looked him up.
Tony Yates?
It was before Tony Yates. Before Tony Yates.
Before Tony Yates. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a challenge. I can't go back that. I've certainly been a fan that long, but I can't remember the name.
Oh, listen, I remember when you guys had Cummings playing for you and just some great players. I've seen them all. I mean, they were right there in front of me. And Huggins, too. I've got to know him over the years, and that was great. But I've worked colleges for 37 seasons. And then when the NBA came to town, it was kind of a natural fit. So I do shot clock for the Memphis Grizzlies. And then a few years ago, they decided that they would like to have neutral game operations crew, which is the scoreboard, the clock, the shot clock, and the official book, the four-man crew or four-person crew, and to do the NBA finals. Because that way, you know, you can't fudge a half second here or a second there, or you have no reason to.
Right.
And so they flew us out to Oakland and Oracle Arena for both the 18 and 19 finals. And that was great. Golden State won the first year. Toronto won the second year. We were there for the deciding game.
What a fun opportunity.
It is. Very intense job.
Sure.
A lot of people don't like to work the shot clock. It's the one thing that you're on your own. You're making judgments to whether it hit the rim or not. And that seems simple until you get into a game where all 10 players can jump higher than the rim, you know.
Sure.
And then, you know, what hit the rim, the ball or a hand? And then the other thing is possession. And the NBA rule says appearance of possession. That's what the rule says. Well, whose appearance is that? So who makes that decision? I have a nanosecond to make those decisions. And I had the game last night. I have a game tomorrow night, and it's exciting. It's a, every game's a challenge, and I enjoy that. And that has been a great opportunity for me. And then I would always take those dollars and use those to take the kids on vacation and do different things. We got to see Yosemite and the wine country and Acadia National Park.
George, it sounds like you're busy 24/7.
I am, and so we're going to kind of fuse out of those here in the next few years and focus on the Christmas trees and, you know, kind of fade out into the sunset. But
all right. So, George, before we go too long, I want to jump into talking a little bit about the State Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan and where you all stand with that. I know you've been given the responsibility to kind of to shepherd that. And so tell us a little bit in a nutshell, if you can, where you stand now and what you're looking at, looking for as a product, and what are your goals there?
Well, great. I appreciate that. Ann Marshall gave me this opportunity along with Gerald and April to work with the 2030 Tennessee State Recreation Plan. It's what it is it's the plan for Tennessee for the next 10 years. And they had a 2020, 2010, and I've always been on the other side. So it's kind of been interesting and a wonderful opportunity to be on this side of it. I used to go to the meetings and give input and ask questions and do those things because recreation in Tennessee is very important to me. It has been, you know, since I've got involved in the early 80s. So what we have, we're going to develop the Statewide Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan. We refer to as SCORP. And then we have a committee of approximately 25 to 30 individuals. And that's called the TRAC. You know, we have all these acronyms. We're like every other agency. And that's the Tennessee Recreation Advisory Committee.
Right.
And then we have subcommittees. And you, I'm sure you've probably served on these before. And so our group has been working. We've had seven TRAC meetings that started in August. And the most recent one was probably in February. We have four areas of, or four subcommittees and areas that we're working our goals and issues.
And so these meetings that you've been having are, have been virtual meetings or in, actually in-person meetings?
Well, they've been virtual. And okay. This has been a challenge because, as you know, we usually have community meetings all across the state.
Sure.
In the mornings, afternoons, evenings, wherever and whenever to try to get as much input because this is where we want to put our dollars for LWCF, LPRF, RTP, TRIP, and we want to put them in the right areas. This is like we were talking about master planning. This is like a huge master plan for parks and recreation in the state.
Right.
And so we actually do use Zoom, and we work with, we hired an agency, Kimley Horn, an A&E firm, a landscape architect, and they're working with us and they facilitate the meetings, and we've had seven. And then what we did, Mark, was we, in every form we could, we put out information where in a form where people could give us public input. I think we've had over 400 different forms filled out by individuals. And now we're in the process. We've had our seven meetings and we're in the process of taking all that public input and trying to refine it. We have four draft areas that we're focusing on. And,
the issues that have been boiled down and kind of rising to the top of what are the major concerns?
Right. And so they are, some of them are, you're going to say, of course, we have to have that. They are advocacy and education,
okay.
Conservation. We have a new one this year that I'm working with this committee. It's called IDEA, IDEAA, and it's inclusivity, diversity, equity, access, and affordability. And that subject's right on the forefront now.
You bet.
So
you bet.
What a great opportunity to really do everything we can to make our parks accessible and give everyone an opportunity. And so that's one thing I love about our state parks You go to other states, and I go to them, and I'll go fishing or camping there or whatever. And there's a day fee or whatever fee. And I never, I mean, what a great opportunity. You pay a few bucks and you get to see a wonderful facility. So it's well worth it. But you don't do that at Tennessee State Parks. You can just walk in a park and right. no fee. And how can you be more accessible than that? And then we have another subcommittee is the Partnership and Collaboration for Economic Success. So basically we have economics, we have our inclusion, conservation, and then advocacy and education.
So those are the kind of being boiled down to being the major elements of the plan. And if people want to provide input, are there still opportunities to do that? And if so, how?
The best way to do that right now would be to send me an email, and I can send them a form, and you can give me a George.Brogdon, B-R-O-G-D-O-N, at TN.gov.
Okay.
George. All right. And we'll be sure and get that because it's important to get as much as we can. This is just a wonderful opportunity for both our citizens and for us to develop a plan that's going to be great for Tennesseans.
When do you think that, when would you expect to have an actual document prepared and out the door?
We are shooting for this fall.
Okay.
Shooting for this fall. Things slowed us down a little bit. COVID's been a little bit, you know, like I said, definitely a challenge. But as the plan is working with the subcommittee, and I only get to work with one subcommittee, but it's been so exciting just to get down to the grassroots of what we can actually do. And so I'm looking forward to being able to maybe be around long enough to help a little with the implementation of the plan.
Sure, sure. Well, George, I really do appreciate you very much taking time out of your schedule to be with us today. It's been a joy to talk with you. And I hope folks that are interested in the state recreation master plan that they will get in touch with you. I know that you all have created a Facebook page for that project as well. Am I correct in that?
Correct. And okay. if they can go to it's really fine to put TDEC RES in, and under Recreation and Educational Services, you'll see the 2030 SCORE plan.
Okay.
Click on that. They can find all the information, input opportunities, I think they can find everything they need Super. To be part of the plan.
Well, George, once again, thank you for joining us today. It's been a joy to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark, and love your podcast. Thank you.
Thanks.